Good evening, everyone. I would like to call to order. I would like to call the meeting to order. Can we do roll call?
Councilmember Brazil. Councilmember Burleson, excused. Councilmember Berry, excused. Councilmember Dones, excused. Councilmember Gardner. Commissioner Gardner. Commissioner Knowles. Commissioner Sass.
Here.
Commissioner McClendon.
Here.
Commissioner Small.
Here.
Commissioner Varlag.
Here.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. No, we need one more. Oh, Shanita. Yes. Oh, okay.
But what we're going to do is just want to elevate all of the non-action items and start to meet about that. Which we can't go to action item number 3, which is the approval of the minutes, because we need quorum for that. So what I'm going to do is we're going to jump to our capstone presentation. I would like to call public comment.
I have no speakers for public comment.
Thank you very much. So in lieu of waiting to become have quorum, we're going to move to our capstone presentation by Ms. Knight, who's done a wonderful job with the tasks that we provided for her. So I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Knight to present to us.
Hi, good evening, everyone. My name is Alicia Knight, and I'm a recent graduate from UC Berkeley. And this past May, I graduated. So that's the first thing. Go Bears. But as a part of my program, I was required to complete a capstone project with a real world client to solve a real world problem. And so I think you all, I've been working with the commission for, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 months now. And so I know the commission is very familiar with the scope of work. I also am aware that at your last commission meeting, there was a presentation presented of my presentation to the Black Reparations Project. However, I wanted to be here with you all in person to present it to you live, and then just be available to answer any questions that you all may have. So a lot of the information that we're going to go through is going to be similar to what you all have already seen. Because my report has not changed, right? So it'll be pretty much the same, but feel free to ask me any questions that you all have. So from there, I'm going to go ahead and present, if that's okay. Okay. Okay, one second. Give me one second. I just want to make sure I can share appropriately. I may have to swap the screens. Yeah, I just want to make sure that I can. Sure, but I wanted to present like this, oh, there it goes. I think so. I don't know if I can do a split screen. That's what I'm worried about. Can you all see my presentation?
Yes.
All right. Sorry. Thank you for your patience. So the name of my project is A Journey to Repair, Guidelines for an Effective Harm Report. You can go to the next slide. And before we get started, I wanted to just share a video with you all that really informed my research and was really powerful.
So I recognize that's above your concern, your level of authority, but I didn't know.
1 second, I don't think you all can hear.
Because usually I we have to stop sharing and share again.
Okay.
Make sure your computer is muted because it's getting the feedback. So you want to mute your computer and then share sound. There you go. Now when you reshare, share with sound.
Me too. And I think I want to go here. You may have to unshare this screen. I don't see share with sound though. I'm sorry. I'd like to think that I'm more technologically savvy than this, but it's a rough day. But now we are sharing everything. My notes on it. I don't want that. Gosh. I'm going to try one more thing, and if not, I will play the video later for you all. Mm-hmm. Oh, there it goes. Pause.
It didn't, the sound didn't start. Right there.
Mm-hmm. Share.
This is absolute wizardry happening over here.
And where do we see share with sound?
I think it already, we already did that, so I think you can just hit play. I think it already is doing it. Oh, it's good. It said, you can say turn up the volume if you want, but it's going to work.
No?
Study last night for the Virginia Standards of Learning exam, so I recognize that's above your concern, your level of authority, but I didn't know who to raise my concern to, because usually I cook and my husband assists my children with their homework, but I was feeling a little under the weather, so we reversed roles last night, and I saw that what they were teaching my child was that the status of early Africans was unknown, and that they were probably slaves or servants. As a HBCU graduate who knows better, although I lived in Prince William County, I attended Thomas Jefferson High School, so I was not a product of Prince William County schools, but it's one thing to say we're not going to cover that. It's another thing to lie to my child and say that their history is unknown, and that they were probably servants or slaves before they came to America. And I feel like part of this miseducation is the reason for our current country's climate. And the fact that if my child gives an answer other than what's on that paper, that she's considered wrong. So how do I educate my child and teach her that her history is powerful, that her history is amazing, and what her classmates are learning are what they carry with them when they become senior leaders, executives, and feel that it's beneath them to promote someone above them because their ancestors were just slaves, were servants. Right now, I'm working in the CIA as the chief of a group within the Diversity and Inclusion Office, and I'm fighting these battles every day to change minds, to change hearts, to change unconscious bias, because they're not unconscious, they're taught at this age.
So I'll let that sink in for a second while I pull up my slide deck. I don't know where my is disappearing to. There we go. Still nothing. All right. We made it. Thank you. Thank you. All right. So I want to first start by thanking my project sponsors. First, really all of you within Alameda County Reparations Commission, also the Alameda County Library. You all invited me to support your work toward an action plan to be present with the Ad Hoc Reparations Committee and the full board of supervisors. As you all know, Alameda County has a 15-member structure with each member appointing 3 members. And so just really grateful to be present with you all. I also want to thank the Black Reparations Project, which is a collaborative effort between faculty and students at Mills College Northeastern and University UC Berkeley Goldman School of Public Policy. Okay, next slide. So I'm sure many of you are aware or recognize the UN's basic principles and guidelines on the right to remedy and reparation for victims of gross violation. This project views reparation through the UN's framework coupled with NCOBRA's assessment for full repair. In this project, I argue that using the United Nations framework for the reparations, local reparations can push the envelope and influence federal government to act on full repair for historical harms done to communities in need. Next slide. So why this project and why now? Harm isn't just historical, it's inherited. Anti-Black policies such as redlining, discriminatory zoning, and disinvestment didn't just end with the civil rights era, they evolved. And we see this evidence in today's housing disparities, policing patterns, school funding gaps, and even our public health outcomes. Many people think of reparations as something that the federal government should handle. And while that's true, the reality is that most harm was administered locally, which is what the commission is here to elevate and raise. They were administered by cities, and they were administered by counties, by school boards, and redevelopment agencies, just to name a few. And that means that the repair should be done locally as well. Next slide. So what's the scope of the project and the objectives of the project? Since 2020, we've seen a growing wave of local governments attempting to confront this legacy. But many of these efforts lack structure, consistency, and community trust. That's where the harm reports come in. They're a tool to document, legitimize, and drive change at the local level. This work isn't just about the past, it's about creating a foundation for future policy, accountability, and repair. I also just want to note that through my research, I found the question of, are harm reports relevant? Are they important? And so that started to really become the focal of my research. It was really understanding how and why to use the harm report and defending that a harm report is the proper way to establish reparations. Next slide. So I'm sure you all recognize these folks. and again, this information is going to be a repeat for most of you, but I just want to make sure for the public and everyone that's joining us online that I walk through this. So Alameda County's Reparations Commission was formed in 2023 with a mission to create an action plan to facilitate and incentivize a collaborative approach to redress across the county, unincorporated and incorporated. Alameda County is the seventh most populous county in California. It has 14 unincorporated cities and 6 unincorporated communities, and the total population is estimated to be 1.6, and that's as of the census of July 2022. But what's unique about Alameda County is that it's a county versus a city, which is where we see the vast majority of reparative efforts. And recommendations. So as a county, you all have the ability to influence local municipality to create uniformity, which leads to a stronger case when reparations is passed at the federal level and at the state levels. As a result, you all have the ability to accelerate repair and strengthen the case for repair at the local level by targeting resources towards specific areas of injury. Next slide. So it's really important for me to share my positionality. I hold multiple positionalities across this project. I am a Black woman. I am from Oakland, so I am an Alameda County resident. I am a current Master's of Public Affairs. I studied at UC Berkeley. I hold a bachelor's degree from Cal State University, Dominguez Hills. And as a researcher, I experienced this research as an investigator and as an academic and a direct member of the Black community. But by way of my standing, I engaged the research with an authenticity of a Black person from an impacted community. And so it's important for me to share that I also hold institutional authority as a Berkeley researcher. That's important to note. Seeking to understand and assist in address and repair for historical and systemic discrimination affecting the Black communities across Alameda County. But again, as an Alameda County resident, my family was directly impacted by the historical harms that were done to the Black community. And through my lineage and my relationship to my research and my findings, I just want to note that it's not surface level. I do draw on my past traumas. And deep-seated emotions, and my research may have some bias, even though I tried really hard not to. So I believe you all should have received the report and walked through the report by now. And you'll note that the report is broken into 3 different chapters. In my presentation today, I'll provide a high-level overview of the similar cadence and flow of my report, which is chapter 1. What is the harm report and how it serves as a preservation of history led by community and iterative approach. Chapter 2, value of local reparations and the role of the harm report in the overall strategy. And chapter 3, the must-haves of the report, the approach to an effective report in line with next steps to build momentum across Alameda County. Next slide. So for my research methods, my project utilized a mixed methods approach. A mixed methods approach examining my research through primarily qualitative research The approach includes data synthesis, literature review, document review, comparative case selection, and a qualitative semi-structured interviews that made sure to ensure a multidimensional understanding of the harm documentation across all contexts. I did review 7 harm reports, 2 of which were across the nation and 4 specifically within California, which informed my case study analysis. I conducted thematic coding across 4 reports that were randomly selected based on locality, and I conducted a semi-structured qualitative interviews of 8 movement leaders, most of whom were directly involved in the reparative cases that I analyzed. Thank you. So what is a harm report? Kind of getting down to the nitty gritty. A harm report is a form of storytelling that memorializes the historical injustices that have impacted Black people systemically throughout American history. But it's also a tool to document harm and to support reparative action. It's also a foundation for local, federal policy, legal advocacy, and community healing. So if we're going to scale reparative efforts effectively and make them stick, we have to do more than just tell a story. We have to align the harm report with community-driven input. And then in turn, that's how the documents really turn into a transformative solution. At the center of any legitimate harm report is the community itself, not just a source of quotes and anecdotes, but as co-authors of the truth. I found that oral histories, family records, lived memories, they're not just soft data, they're evidence, and they fill gaps where government archives fall short. But also, we have to acknowledge that the work is emotionally heavy. Asking people to relive trauma, especially when past reports have led to nowhere, to be frank, takes a toll, and that's why transparency, care, and follow-through is so critical. I do want to note that after reading 7 different harm reports, just kind of speaking to the trauma, it was really, really heavy and something that I could have expected that I would have had to face or endure. But until it hit me, I didn't fully understand the impact. And so as we're talking about listening sessions and going into these listening sessions, it's really, really important to note that we're asking people to recall their trauma. And of course, that's what's going to drive the harm report forward. But it's also important to have the right people in the room and to make sure we're taking care of our community and not having people relive something without a solution behind it. I would also say that in the past, truth telling has typically happened in churches, which I think we're looking to do some of the listening sessions in churches, living rooms, and community halls. But now we're being asked to do it through official channels, and that shift is really risky. So the report can't just reflect community input. It must honor the community and its authority, which is what I just shared. We need to remember that we're not collecting stories. We're not just collecting stories. We're building legitimacy, right? We're creating a record, and we're laying the foundation for collective repair led by those who have been harmed. Next slide, please. So as you can see now, and if you've read my report, you'll probably see that community input is the theme that really stood out to me through all of the data and the research. And so as we look at that, you'll see as we move through, I'm going to really focus on centering community voices. But as we center community voices, we need to ask, how do we translate truth into structure? It's something that it really needs to be something that the policy world can act on. And so for a harm report to work, for them to move government forward and for government to really act on it, they have to be built correctly. They have to be built right. They need to be based on my research and comparative analysis. There are 6 essential features that consistently show up in the most effective reports. And so you kind of see them here in this wheel: the time frame of harm, audience targeting, clear identification of harmed groups, movements and visuals, in-text evidence and quotes and citations, And that's what really, and avoid conflating the harm. We can talk about that. And that's really what leads to an effective harm report. So I'm going to dig into each of those six essential features a little bit more. And the first one is that there needs to be clear and concise identification of who's been harmed as you're generating a harm report by name, by place, by lineage, or lived condition. Without this, you cannot define eligibility or scope. This is really important when you guys are moving into the implementation stage. Second is to define the time frame. So harm has to be anchored in policy windows, not just as moral grievance, but a legal and political one. Third, we have to avoid conflating the harms. So a harm report should not be a catch-all for every injustice, but precision is the power of the report. And so I did a few case studies in my report, which you all will be able to move through. And as we talk about the data, I'll explain that I didn't really analyze based on the best form of implementation, but it was important to understand how these core elements fit into implementation. And so again, not conflating the harms, meaning just throwing everything into the kitchen sink, is really important. We need to be very precise, and it's an iterative approach. And so as you're working through the harm report, it's something that you'll build on. And over time, you'll find these disparities. You'll want to focus on specific disparities, drill down into those, get them to be time bound and tied to a person before you just produce a giant harm report that also includes recommendations and put it before a governing body. In-text citations and quotations are really powerful and build credibility. They turn memory into documented record, and that's something that policymakers and the courts can actually work with, so that's important. The fifth is audience targeting. Your report should speak to the community and to the commission and to the county. So make sure you're using plain language and not academic abstraction, right? We're actually trying to capture community voices, and so it's something that needs to be read back to people. And then finally, are moments and visuals. So what I found from the different harm reports that I analyzed was that structure wasn't as important as it was in terms of collecting the memories and actually having people see themselves in the reports. So tying it back to periodicals, articles, photos, that's really, really important. Go to the next slide. So now that we've analyzed what makes a harm report structurally sound, we should explore why that clarity, especially around harm identification, matters as we move forward through the documentation to the implementation stage. So what you see on the screen here are four different models. And we should think of these models as roadmaps to the same destination, which is repair. Model one represents HR 40, which operates at the federal level. Because the universe of harm is nationwide, identifying who qualifies and for which period becomes the commission's first and longest task. If the clarity is vague, Congress has no target for restitution. Model two represents Evanston. This is a very strong case that I hope you all make sure you dig into if you haven't already. Evanston narrowed its harm by focusing on housing discrimination between 1919 and 1969. So that's that narrow focus that we're talking about. They tightly defined who and when, and then the commission set eligibility around that for revenue, for delivery of payments, and that was within 2 years. Model three represents Asheville and Buncombe County in North Carolina. If I had to give an opinion, a biased opinion, I actually really appreciate their model. They began with securing funds first. They had money on the table before it had a precise harm report. That upfront funding built political momentum, and it also forced the commission to backfill, specifically later slow rolling out the harm report and the implementation from there. And then Model 4 represents Palm Springs or Section 14, which was litigation driven. So with this model, legal vulnerability demands laser sharp harm definition, if that's the route you all choose to take. Without it, settlements will collapse and the city and the county may stay in court for quite some time. But Palm Springs did a really good job at identifying the harm and drilling into it in a litigation standpoint. Thank you. So as Alameda County designs its own model, we can borrow selectively. I'm sorry, can we go back a slide? We can borrow selectively from Evanston's precision, Asheville's budget commitment, Palm Springs' legal clarity, while anchoring everything in a holistic community-authored harm report. Again, I just want to be clear that my research is not focused on the implementation models. These examples are included to demonstrate how the strength and clarity of a harm report can shape or constrain the path to reparations. I reference these models not to evaluate their outcome, but to close the loop on the report's role. Let me go to the next slide. Thank you. So lessons from the field. After analyzing all the 7 harm reports across the country, using interviews, documentation, and a custom evaluation rubric across an effectiveness criteria that we created. So effectiveness, cost to the community, community input, political feasibility, and institutional uptake, a few key lessons stood out. First, community authorship matters more than formatting, which is what we've talked about. Reports that are co-created with the impacted community had more legitimacy, even if they were not polished. Thank you. The second is political buy-in as the catalyst. So the best written harm report will stall without championships inside of the institutions to move them forward. So cities like Evanston and Palm Springs made traction, not just because of their design, but because of local leadership and the fact that they were willing to stand behind the report. And the third is institutional uptake, which is really the tipping point. So the goal of the harm report isn't just to tell the truth, but it's to make the truth unavoidable. When the report is taken up by a commission and codified in policy and cited in law, that's when the document turns into action. But perhaps the most important lesson is that structure doesn't guarantee success, which is what we've already talked about. Some reports scored higher on paper, but did not resonate with the community or trigger any formal steps. That disconnect reveals an importance to combining structure and narrative, data, and voice. Thank you. So after that, I also conducted a thematic analysis. And this was really where I started to drill in on 4 of the 7 reports. And that's where I noticed a striking pattern. So despite the regional and structural differences, 3 key core dimensions of harm surfaced again and again, which is what you'll find here. Housing discrimination, spatial segregation, often through redlining and zoning abuse. Second was cultural erasure. So when public narratives erase or distort Black history. And the third was education inequalities. So especially through segregated and underfunded schools, that's where we're seeing this trend. These aren't isolated harms. They intersect and they reinforce one another. So you'll find, and this is what I found as I made the matrix, but housing discrimination goes hand in hand with educational disparities. I don't need to tell you all this. I'm sure you know this, right? But you've got to try to find a way to narrow it down and make it time bound and point it back to a policy at the end of the day. Thank you, Boy. So what does this mean for Alameda County? We're almost done. Thank you, guys. First, we need to recognize the harm report as being written as a continuum. So what I found is that we need to begin with a historical grounding and create a historiography. That's a term that I only saw come up a few times throughout my research, but a historiography is it's the best way to explain it. It's a formal report, not just through stories, but you're telling history, right? So it codifies the information that you all are, that the community is providing. And so you really want your harm report to be written as a historiography and for it to actually become a part of history. Second is the process to be, the process must be community led from the beginning. So this means investing in partnerships with Black-led organizations, archivists, cultural workers. The legitimacy of the report will really depend on whether the community sees itself in it. And the third is creating interim harm reports. This is really important. I found that in my research, a lot of times people wanted to just create a big, beautiful harm report. And we actually kind of see that with the state. But the reality is this should be an ongoing process. It's a wheel, it's an interim. And so as you all start to create your harm report, you wanna narrow in on the focus, whatever the disparity may be, and then bring that forward to the governing body. And once you bring that forward to the governing body, you come back and you're also identifying additional harms. So it doesn't need to be one giant book. What I found is that most of the commissions that took that approach, those reports end up sitting on a shelf. And so in order for them to be actionable, they need to be digestible is the best way to say it, especially in front of a governing body. And so you really want to go at this iteratively. I guess the last thing that I'll say is that Alameda County, you all have a really powerful opportunity to create a model that is historically grounded, politically feasible, and community authored. The other thing is that you all are unique. So we haven't really seen a lot of counties going at this, right? It's typically cities or at the state level. And so if you kind of walk through my report, you'll see that because Alameda County is such a large jurisdiction, and I'm recommending that you all move forward at an iterative approach, I would say start with a model city, right? Start like with a pilot city, and you start working with those municipal leaders to gain that support so that you can keep moving it forward. So we just don't want it to stall. Included in my report, I also tried to provide some next steps in terms of how I think you all could go at this. I started just with creating a stakeholder map, understanding the jurisdictions, understanding who your political leaders are within those jurisdictions, and getting that political will from inside of those municipalities. Scanning the political climate, which is what I kind of just spoke on. Building strategic partnerships, it's a part of that as well. Cultivating municipal partners, launching a pilot community, engaging an archival researcher, that's really important. I know that the library is your sponsor, which is great, but you're really gonna need someone to dig into the archives and be able to pull that data. And each municipality is gonna have their own archives, right? The county will have their archive, but it may not be as robust as you need. So I would say you all wanna work with an archivist. And then also reassessing language and framing, and then making sure that you're able to sustain and build the momentum, right? So the political climate goes in waves, you all know this. And so as you all are building your municipal partnerships, you also want to recognize political cycles, right? People term out who may have been your support. And so that's also a part of the strategic approach of being iterative, right? And kind of going at it a bit narrowly is that you can really focus and work with your political support and also be watching the political climate as you move forward to build additional municipal support as well along the way. I know this has been really long, so I'm going to just speed this up a little bit. What's at stake? What I found, again, I'm going back to the historiography and the harm report. If for not anything else, what's really important about the harm report is that you're documenting the history that's being lost, right? And so going back to the video that I showed in the beginning, and to be quite honest, through my research, I'm blessed to say both my grandmothers are still living. They're 95. And I sat with them, right, and talked to them about what they experienced migrating to Alameda County, why they came to Alameda County, what was happening for them while they were here. And the moment they're gone, that's it, right? We're already facing erasure from the federal level, and it's just working its way down. And so if for nothing else, get the harm report done to solidify the history. Yeah. That's all. I have a thank you, but yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. I'm sorry it was so long. I guess I just want to open to any questions you all have. I'll do my best to answer.
Commissioner Sats, I don't have a question per se. It's a lot of the things that you were going over, shall I say no? A lot of things that you were going over, you know, made sense, especially with the, you know, making a narrow focus and then building from there and moving forward. Mm-hmm. And I think that's some of the things that we've been struggling with as the commission, trying to get everything in all at once to say, here's everything. And that was having that information and that background from you can really help us move forward and show that, hey, why don't we do this? And it's the step-by-step approach, getting mm-hmm. something now, and then as it starts to steamroll and it picks up momentum and effort. So mm-hmm. thank you.
Yeah, no problem. And I mean, that's exactly right. Again, like with 14, you know, incorporated cities, there's so much ground to tackle, and this work is not easy. It's emotionally draining as well, and taxing on you all as well. As much pride as we have in it, it's also hard, right? And so I do think that the best approach is to pilot it, focus on a narrow area, and go at it in that way. And as you're talking to the community, you'll start to figure out what those disparities and those harms are. But that is the first step. You got to get it from the community, hear it from them, and that'll point you toward how to narrow. And once you have that, you start building on it, go after that first narrow focus, keep building the harm report.
Right, and that's what I was, you know, thinking. It's the people will tell us what's important to them.
Yep.
And yes, everybody knows all this stuff is important, but it's sort of like saying, yeah, it's great to have a house, but today I need food. Yep. You know, it's that type of event.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Thank you.
Commissioner Bazile. First of all, let me thank you for a thorough report. And I look forward to reading all of the details here. And speaking from, as someone who's been on this issue since 1971, I can tell you that it is a long haul, as your documentation has shown, that there is so many angles, nuances, and levels that are involved here that gathering it all together would take an army, really, mm-hmm. instead of, you know, you doing what you have done and with the university, to give us an indication of how long this can take. The information that you gave us in terms of the jurisdictions, it again lays out to me the importance of Alameda County, mm-hmm. because there are these municipalities out there of various sizes and how much time and staff they can put into it. Mm-hmm. But because of our progressive reputation in the big enchilada of California, we carry a lot of weight. Mm-hmm. So what you have done in terms of the framing this for us is ultimately 50 years down the road, we'll probably get its due recognition. But I want to just thank you for what you put forth in front of us and the frameworks that you've laid out for us. And so I just want to say to my fellow commissioners that laying out the legal question that you talked about with Palm Springs, I'm an attorney, so this is where I got involved with this issue as slavery as a legal issue at UC Berkeley Law School. Mm-hmm. And we were looking at the impact of the legal profession in creating the charters and working with the various slave institutions coming from the Queens and so forth. So now we're focusing 50 years later on what we should have been, and that is what has been the United States involvement in denying or creating this harm. Mm-hmm. And that is going to take, as you have pointed out, H.R. 40 is there, and they're going to need local input, and that the local input that we bring from Alameda County with our ability to talk about these various jurisdictions that we have, I think shows the importance of this commission and what we're doing. So I urge us to be very patient. Don't look for a long-term solution that we're going to be alive to see. And what I am struck by when I go back to 1971, looking at it as a legal problem, as a legislative problem, and as a morality problem. And given the ethics and ethos of America, I don't see any moral standing that, or any moral institution, a lot of churches and religious organizations that are focused on this issue. But I think as we come out with these information, talking about the harm and framing it for people, the moral issue will then start making some connections. And maybe the young man back there in the back, his generation, when they get to be 40 years old and policymakers, they will be ready to take on this issue and try to make corrections to the harm. That's my vision of it, because I don't see in the moral climate that we're in the United States of America today, nobody really giving a damn about this issue. Through.
Thank you. I want to respond to a couple things that you said and just kind of uplift those. The first is your jurisdictional authority, right, as a county. And again, kind of going back to, we have all these municipalities. And so it's really important for you all to figure out what municipalities have an appetite for reparations and how they're going to work with you, because you have influence, right, over those municipalities, but the municipalities are also going to need to work with you. And so the first thing is, who has an appetite and where your roadblocks are, right, with those jurisdictions. With those municipalities. Secondly, you touched on HR 40, and I'm grateful that you did, because in this current political climate, what's most important is that, or what's going to move forward right now is local, is at the local level, right? And so rather than looking at it as solving this larger issue, the federal issue, let the federal do what the federal does. And at, or yeah, uh-huh. but at the local level, right, it's policy, right? It's really, I mean, you can drill deeply into what policies impacted people and what the governing bodies hear and respond to is policy. And so you have to frame it in a way of policy. And the hope is, and the way I wrote the report, is that if all of the municipalities are compliant or working together, right? At some point when the political climate turns over, all of this information should be able to feed back up to federal. So I wouldn't look at this as like trying to solve HR 40, but really look at it as like how you can implement and influence the municipalities, because that's who you all are umbrellaed over, right? So I would look at it that way. Yeah, and then to your point about what we'll see in this lifetime, we talk of 400 years, right? So, but at the same time, what I do think is feasible is a harm report, and really documenting people's stories, right? Because what we do know is that things come missing, right? There's fires, there's all these different things that happen where our history is just wiped away. And so we have the opportunity to document and solidify our history and tell our story today. And I think we can see that in our lifetime. So Leo, I'm committed to helping you with that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you so much. Thank Your work has been impactful. It will be used as the foundation for what we do moving forward. And I was so happy that we got you as our student, because I knew when we were making a selection that this project and this work would be super meaningful to you. So from the bottom of all of our hearts, and Chair Gore, who's not here, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. We got to do public comment, correct? Give me some grace. This is my first time in the big chair.
Let me just make a quick comment, and it's very short, because I want us to move on to the stuff on our agenda. I just want to applaud you for doing your dissertation on this. Imagine how many Black folks, number of us here at the table, who've gotten doctorates. That's not what our dissertation has been on. You're to be applauded. I want to thank you. Thank you very much.
We'll just note that there is a quorum. Commissioner Herskin has arrived. We have a quorum.
Thank you so much. All right. So I'm going to bump us back up to agenda number three or four to approve the minutes. Commissioner Sass.
Sass will move to approve the minutes.
Commissioner Varlack seconded. Discussion? No.
Any discussion? Any edits? All right, let's do roll call for that.
For approval of the minutes for June 11th, Commissioner Gardner.
Aye.
Commissioner Herskin. Commissioner Sass.
Approved.
Commissioner Knowles.
Abstain.
Commissioner Varlack. Commissioner Bazil.
Abstain.
Commissioner Small.
Approved.
Commissioner McClendon.
Approved.
Okay, we don't have consensus due to the two abstentions, so we can table this until the next meeting.
Awesome, thank you.
And I say for the record the reason why I abstained, because I was not here for this meeting.
No, absolutely. All right, let's move to agenda item number five, which is the debrief from the ad hoc meeting earlier today, which was at 4 o'clock across the street. I want to also openly thank Commissioner Knowles and Commissioner Garner for being there, having my back and supporting and doing public comment. Oh, and Commissioner Smalls, who I was trying to encourage to come all the way to the front. But it's always good when multiple commissioners can come to all the other elements, including other listening sessions. So I just want to say thank you to that. The update from the ad hoc meeting, as a reminder, the ad hoc meeting is made up between two supervisors, Supervisor Marquez and Supervisor Miley. Last meeting, we presented and created a detailed budget that ad hoc committee asked us to provide more details. We did the work. Not only did we not do the work, we did the work, but we created a structure for a listening session through a few different special meetings. So I also want to give ourselves a round of applause for doing that and building the capacity and creating the budget. Today at the ad hoc meeting, we presented the three options that we all decided on, option A, B, and C. The ad hoc committee chose option A, which was super amazing. I was happy to hear that option A was the option that they wanted to see happen throughout Alameda County. Additional to that, the ad hoc committee and both of Supervisor Marquez and Supervisor Miley both committed $125,000 each to our efforts, which that is a total amount of $250,000. And they pledged to get our full budget amount to $500,000. So the next steps here is that with the commitment from the ad hoc committee, they're going to bring our budget to the full board. At the full board, they will ask their fellow supervisors, colleagues, to make a similar pledge to our efforts to make it $500,000. One of the things that's just a reminder that Chair Gore wanted all of us to do is make sure that we reach out to the supervisors, for the supervisors who nominated us for these roles, and have the discussion. That presentation or that ask will be in July 22nd. So if you guys can have those touch points with your supervisors before then, to give it give our ad hoc committee a little bit more easier time when they do present this, that would be very helpful. But the goal is $500,000. As a reminder, option A costs $439,000. So that's above what we put on our budget sheet. And I'm pretty sure we can find good places to put that additional dollars if approved.
Clary, right quick on this, Commissioner Gardner. Serendipity would have it, as we walked out the building, Shad and I ran into Supervisor Tam, and actually spoke with her about this, told her that I would get back to her about it. She remembered me. That was good. It was exactly what you said we needed to do, took place in the elevator on the way down.
So you're saying you already accomplished the assignment?
I'm going to follow up and do it more formally, but it was serendipitous. Yeah.
That was definitely good timing. Supervisor Tam is also the supervisor who nominated me, so you and I can probably do that together. And I also know that Supervisor Tam is having a commission meet and greet, I think, on the 30th. Yep. So we have a couple different touch points. Absolutely. Absolutely. So definitely good news from earlier today. We're moving on with the budget. And one of the other items I wanted to talk about, we did talk about our commission's efforts in fundraising and making sure that dollars can get to a foundation. And this month, if we solidified $500,000 from the Alameda County, I do believe that we can then promote that and request matching funds from other folks. So I love the idea of us being able to solidify that dollar amount, then going out and also doing some fundraising on our own. Any questions from commissioners regarding the ad hoc? And I will welcome any supervisor or representative if they wanted to share anything about their pledge to the commission.
OK, Good evening, commissioners and public. My name is Supervisor Elisa Marquez. I represent District 2, so that includes Hayward, Union City, Newark, and portions of Fremont. I'm sorry I stepped out, so I didn't hear your entire report, but just want to share with all of you that along with Supervisor Miley, thank you for appointing me to the Reparations Ad Hoc Commission, but it is really important to me, and my friends and colleagues know that I say this all the time. I truly believe you have to have skin in the game. So I wholeheartedly, and we talked about this at our last ad hoc committee meeting, but I felt strongly that as a member of the ad hoc committee, as a lifelong resident of South Hayward, just knowing the harm that's been done to this community, I also serve as the chair of public protection. We don't need to go through the numbers. We know who's being impacted. We know who's at Santa Rita Jail. We know who's at JJC. So it is imperative that we back up policy with action and tangible outcomes. So today we did publicly pledge $125,000 from District 2 budget. And I'm also committed to working with the commission to attract more dollars through philanthropy, businesses, anyone that's willing to support this effort. And just want to commend the presentation today. I was very impressed. I love the strategic analysis, the narrow focus. You know, you guys are making history today. So just congratulations. Thank you for your patience. It's taken us a while to get here, but I think it's been worth it because we're doing things right and we're centering community voices. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Any other feedback or questions from the commissioners regarding this agenda item? Seeing none, is there any public comment? Oh, the mic.
I have no speakers for this item.
Thank you very much. All right, so we already did our capstone presentation. So we're going to move on to the listening session planning discussion, which is the six sessions, including and this is an action item from all of the commissioners. Want to go ahead?
Well, first, since we earlier we discussed we're going to have ECC and some other things involved in picking those six sessions, and as you were, I was told earlier, we are able to use a library session, so we need to actually gather more information so before we can present all six sessions. But we do have one session that we're looking at right now. Which was the date of that?
August 23rd.
So August 23rd at
First Baptist Church
in Russell City. So that is one that we already have on the area, and I know we've alerted Supervisor Marquez. So if you're able to attend, we'd love you to be there. So that would be the one I would put up right now, and with the caveat that on our we have a Tuesday at our commission meeting for listening sessions, we're going to bring up more information to put together dates so we can have those ready for next month. So if we can amend this to vote for this particular one with all the other ones coming forward at the next meeting. Does it make sense? And she's nodding her head, so yes, I can do it.
Yeah.
Not in trouble, so
he's got to make the motion.
So I'd like to make a motion that we approve the listening session for August 23rd at First Baptist Church in Russell City at noon.
Yes.
Commissioner Knowles, second.
Commissioner Sass has made a motion to change the agenda item to approve for August 23rd at noon, and we have that seconded by Commissioner Knowles. Can we do a vote? Any discussion regarding change? Any person on the commission who want to discuss all six tonight? No? All right. No discussion.
Commissioner Gardner?
Yes.
Commissioner Sass?
Yes.
Commissioner Knowles?
Yes.
Commissioner Varla?
Yes.
Commissioner Bazile? Commissioner Small?
Yes.
Commissioner Herskin?
Yes.
Commissioner McClendon?
Yes.
Approved.
Awesome. Look at that. We're moving. All right. Any public comment regarding this agenda item? All right. No public comment. All right. We're going to move on to the next agenda item. This was an item that we somehow missed at our last meeting, but it's the approval of the material to be used during the listening sessions. We already went over that that material before. That also, that material was presented or printed here and presented to us last time, but it wasn't an action item. So this is our opportunity to make the language and the wording an action item and approved by the commission. I'm going to turn it over to Commissioner Smalls to walk us through that information, and then we're going to seek the approval of the language. And I just want to add, just for my fellow commissioners, this is our opportunity to make last edits before we vote on this, because this is the foundation of what we're going to use and present moving forward.
We had talked about lightening up the background a little. Other than that, I think you should go ahead, Chef.
Thank you, Commissioner Gardner. So one thing we discussed in our previous meetings about the listening sessions is that there should also be an educational component, if for no other reason than to level set ahead of the discussion, so that we start out by talking about the concrete harms that have occurred, and then so that we're just starting the discussion in the proper place, and we're not starting from scratch, as it were. But the first thing we talked about doing was a land acknowledgement, since we are still on stolen land. And then following that, a brief bit about the formation of the commission, so why we're there, even having a listening session in the first place. So a bit about the resolution that established it and the establishment of the commission. And then a brief bit about the composition of the commission, because I think that is important, that it's designed to be representative of particular constituencies within the county. So it's not just, you know, randos like myself. Next slide. So there's a bit about history. We have a slide about the overall scope of the slave trade. And then we have some slides that were furnished by Dr. Gardner, if he wants to say a few words about those.
The slave trade is it's in three parts. This first one is about the slave trade itself, is what we, a great term used by Basil Davidson, is an African epidemiological holocaust, where actually slave wars were fought, folks were rounded up, forced to march to the sea, put in slave forts. As a public health doctor, I focus on the commingling of disease between Africans and Africans who had never worked with each other, and African and Europeans. The death rate prior to getting to the New World itself was 50% from the interior to the coast. Next slide. The Middle Passage, which we all know about, Africans were stacked as objects. The diet were leftovers of what the colonists had. Disease was rampant. Of course, there were beatings and killings. Unfortunately, suicide. They estimate the death rate at somewhere between 10 to 20%. Next slide. The breaking in period. Imagine you have to go to, you know, 1,500 miles away. Mortality rate was great. Colder climate. Change of language, loss of, breakup of families, trauma and shock. It's a great paper done by a woman when I was in college 155 million years ago on the interruption of menstruation and why that led to the continuation of the slave trade for a long time in the United States. Next slide. The growth of slavery in the United States kind of says it all. There is 700,000 enslaved in 1790. By 1860, nearly 4 million people, African Americans, were enslaved in the United States. punchline, slavery and health disparities. It is what we talk about health disparities today was already happening. And there's a period after that. Twice the amount of tuberculosis among African Americans. I actually have, we should add the citations with these. Genital diseases were twice as much among African Americans. Miscarriages were four times as much among African Americans, and the mortality rate was off the chart bad. And I do have the citations. We just need to add them to the slide. So that's it. Then those are four or five slides. We just set the background for this. This is a great slide. This is where I switch it over to Chad.
I think so, yeah. And so this, I adapted an image that an artist had made, sort of depicting the scale of how long slavery lasted versus how long Jim Crow lasted, and then how long the post-Jim Crow, which, you know, legal segregation isn't a thing necessarily, but we still have, obviously, de facto segregation, that span of time since the civil rights reforms has been very short comparatively. I think it's always good to keep that in perspective. And we'll note that we're at the very, very end there. And then so one thing that stuck out to me in sort of the reaction when the board established the commission, one of the letters that our retired supervisor Carson noted was that someone pointed out, well, California wasn't a free state or wasn't a slave state. Why are we even having reparations initiatives here in the first place? And it's important to point out that even if this California was admitted to the Union as a quote unquote free state, it still condoned slavery for those of African descent. And then of course you can talk about folks of Asian and indigenous descent, but there was a fugitive slave law passed in the state of California. And I found in a book, there was a picture of an ad of someone listing a reward for recapture of someone who had escaped. And then after the Civil War, state law made Black folks second-class citizens, just like the Jim Crow South. And moving on to Alameda County more specifically. Mr. Sass mentioned homesteading, and the California homesteading law excluded Black folks up until 1900. And then you have redlining and racial steering after that anyway. And these disparities and these inequities still exist with us today. And there's a photo of the Brooklyn Colored School that was established because we didn't have a right to public education in California initially. And this would be where Commissioner Knowles shared some of his experiences and knowledge about Russell City, for instance. If you would like to say a few words now, or we can.
They keep warning me not to. But what I would like to say is that Russell City was not necessarily a place for slaves. What was done to the residents of Russell City was more for profit. They took our land from us for profit. Mm-hmm. There was Blacks, Asians, and other ethnicities out there. So we would like to be considered as part of some of the things that reparation would represent, but not totally. Because that slavery was not an issue at that time. So I will be brief with that.
Yeah. Let me just say, and I was going to raise this in the meeting this afternoon, but reparations for Russell City and Hayward will impact, is for all of the people in Russell City and Hayward, regardless of who they are. So it's not either or, it's both. Okay, I'm gonna shut up.
And just the one thing, the pictures of the Ku Klux Klan up there is really impactful. I grew up in Fremont, and right around the corner, there was an apartment that had Ku Klux Klan KKK meetings on a monthly basis from around the corner from my house. So things like that, people go, oh, that never happened. Yeah, it did. And that was not in 1924. That was in 1969 and 70.
And can I point out that the damage or the harm that was done, if it was facilitated or directly caused by governmental action, then that is where the unconstitutionality comes in. There's been a discrimination that must be repaired by the perpetrator of that discrimination, so that color and everything does not matter. What matters going in a la Palm Springs is that the legal action, the government's involvement is the issue. And once the government's discrimination has been shown, the impact is to be repaired by some other, you know, determination for civil action.
Let me just tell one other story and then we can go back to you, Shad. And I do this in my class sometime, not sometime, I do it all the time. I teach a class on health disparities for a number of years. I bought a home in Oakland in 1995. The deed that I received to the house said explicitly, this house cannot be sold to anybody not of the Caucasian race. I still have a copy of that. I would pass it out in class and have copies of it. Of course, there was another little amendment in the corner. This was overturned and but this is what was true. That thing was built in, the house was built in 1940s. You could be a servant, but you couldn't be an owner. So we've got plenty of data. I appreciate the report that was given earlier, Sister did.
Can I alert you to two things? You mentioned health disparity. Part of the Civil Rights Act that is being rolled back had to do with workplace disparity. If workplace disparity was shown after you made a complaint, it would shift the burden of proof to the employer then to show that whatever this person is alleging happened to them was not a part of a racial disparity. And so we have cases going before the Supreme Court right now that I want you all to watch out for. And that is, they're trying to get rid of the whole idea of disparity being indicative of anything, meaning that you cannot prove racial discrimination simply because you see a disparity in impact. And if that is taken out, then there's no way to pursue judicial remedies, health-wise or workplace-wise. Well, that's what I'm saying. I just let you know that that's on the table right now, along with another issue that people are not watching out for, and that is birthright citizenship.
We have a nice quote from Martin Luther King because that's their favorite. and then we talk about defining reparations using the UN framework, and this is where Commissioner Barry would take the baton. I'm going to go fast here. And then we have some questions to sort of orient the discussion. What we found during those of us when we did the pilot listening session at Allen Temple was that having all four questions at once sort of made the discussion unfocused. And so we have like a question per slide to sort of kind of keep people on topic. And then, you know, whoever's moderating will kind of gently kind of guide the discussion to the next question.
Yes, the discussion questions, you know, it's we're going to keep them where we try to get them focused and keep the time down. And if we have extra time, we can always go back and get more information. But we want to make sure that we get everybody who would like to speak to be able to speak, because a lot of times people will not, but if they feel comfortable and safe, they might come back later and said, well, I'd like to now. So that's kind of the idea. And the discussion questions are pretty self-explanatory if you just want to run through them.
The first slide about how you or your family have been affected by slavery and racism. And then, again, the talking specifically about the impact of those harms. So ask people to think a bit more specificity, and then specifically in Alameda County. And then think about reparative action, and then especially the role of local government. And then, you know, this one, I think, maybe trying to end on a more hopeful note, but asking people to sort of envision what it would be like if we actually sort of managed to accomplish some of those repairs.
And if you drop back to question three, that goes directly to what should we take to repair those harms? And that should give us the idea of the starting point of what is most important at this moment, as we were talking about with, hey, let's start with something that's digestible and move forward.
And then we have like a Google form asking people a sort of support for, you know, general broad categories of reparations. And then an open-ended question asking them to sort of, what are some things they would support that we didn't list? And then asking them about things that we didn't cover, maybe they wanted discussed. And then there's like another question about which district they're from. And
we have paper forms too.
Just yeah. So. Also, don't scan that code. That doesn't lean anywhere right now. Just FYI.
Get a picture of Shad going, what's up?
That is not what you will see. It is a dead link. And also tell people where to find us. And because I'm an academic, no one will read this, but it's fine. And we had a bunch of data slides. Thanks to the health department.
I would just add one of those data slides. Yeah. I would add one of the data slides.
Those are on the back end if folks have the printed version.
I know. I would just add one of the data slides, just one, during the segregation period.
But they're all important, Dr. Gardner.
I know, but just take one because it gives you a linear relationship between what was going on under slavery and what goes on under. So I would just add one. I think overall we're trying to get this done in a half an hour and then spend the next hour listening to what people say. It's a listening session. So that's the kind of.
Well, I want to thank you all for your hard work. I really like this presentation and how it's laid out. One of the things, if you guys can maybe touch on very quickly, was just if you guys can just talk about the trauma that was being unpacked in the pilot listening session, because that was something that you guys, well, we all did not anticipate being in that room, and how we've planned for that in our current listening session strategy.
You had more of the data.
Well, if I understand you correctly, the trauma. My feeling is, and even though we've set aside some money for this, unfortunately, most African Americans are aware of that trauma and have lived with it all their life. So they're not going to come into a meeting and break down. They're going to break. They did the exact opposite. And what we had to look out for, and this is toward our MC here. Black folks are preachers. So when they raised their hand, they went on 5-10 minutes. You know, how do you kind of slow? So it wasn't like, in fact, I should show you my notes from that. That was my main takeaway. So yeah, we should be prepared for trauma situations. But unfortunately, many of us, particularly of my age and older and younger, we're aware of that. This is who we are. I'm not going to go to a meeting and They killed us. They've been killed. That's what they do. I'm sorry.
No, that makes sense. And as it's like I said, it's not trauma coming out. It's more of, hey, we're stories and people are being agreeing. Oh, yes, I understand that. Oh, that reminds me. So it's those type of things where it brings familiarity. So it actually makes it easier for people to talk about and we're getting more of the stories. It's not like people are traumatized and lying on the floor. So that's, you know, when we're talking about trauma, that's what we experience there. More of the, hey, we're all in this together. Let's talk about this. And this reminds me of this and that.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Commissioner Gore.
Oh, thank you so much. So I won't be on camera or anything, but I hope you guys can hear me okay. I've started around 2 o'clock in Durham, and I was able to join the ad hoc. So if Supervisor Marquez and Supervisor Miley are still there, I really want to thank you for the significant actions that you guys took of, you know, the $125,000 of discretionary going above and creating the ceiling on the $500,000 approved budget. I'm hoping we get those resources that'll help us do, in particular, the project management so that we can help the listening session subcommittee with a lot of the structure. So I just wanted to add that my gratitude, and in particular of the other agenda item where Supervisor Marquez talked about Russell City and her commitment. You all are very much showing to me, demonstrating true leadership by putting money forward to this effort. It's far below what we need, but I think it will give us a good start. I also want to thank Commissioner McClendon. Thank you for stepping in while, you know, I've been in transit. I'm still on the East Coast, but thanks so much. And to hone in now on the slides, we do have a logo, so I hope that we can put the logo in. And I would hope we could put that logo on every page so we can start branding ourselves. I think one slide, if we could have one slide, and maybe we can work with Alicia on this, on the harms report. I think it's important for folks to know that we are generating, we're doing that research, and that kind of is lost in some of the materials. And one other side I would recommend is the racial wealth gap. So much of the racial wealth gap speaks to that economic, not just de facto, but de jure, right? So leaning into your language, Commissioner Small. And I think that wealth gap also lets you get to some of the areas that you were talking about, Phil. Housing, redlining. So beyond the health, the economic impact has resulted in this racial wealth gap, where, you know, the wealth of a white family is 10x, so like the 117,000, and of a black family is like 15,000. I think one slide, there's a very demonstrative.
Yeah, we actually have a slide. Shad has a slide that shows the economic disparity. Your point is
the racial wealth gap slide. I think then we should put that in, because you know, I think that's very powerful, the health disparity, but the economic speaks to not just, you know, the redlining elements, but it also speaks to the climate disparity, you know, why we live so close to brownfields and freeways and under freeways, all of that, it shows itself in the economic elements. And then lastly, I would just, you know, say that I appreciated that you all passed this single listening session, but I do think it's helpful that, you know, we'd be able to advertise the whole, and we heard this at the ad hoc committee as well, the whole slate of the meetings, right? If we were like, here are the five meetings, you're like, okay, I can't make the August one. Oh, but I can be on the lookout for the September. But because we're doing it one at a time, I think it's creating sort of the disjointedness about how we can present, how people can engage. So I know you all passed it, but I just think we've got to get to a point where we have the whole slate so that we can give the community an opportunity to be able to see where they can engage, as opposed to just having the singular. And I heard the conversation, and I appreciate that it's passed. I I'm just, you know, hopeful. And I was listening to the supervisors also say it would be great to have the whole slate of the meeting. So those are my thoughts, and I'm appreciative that you guys, you know, were able to advance while I was on the road. But I thought it important enough that I could keep dialing in and appreciate everybody's leadership on this. Thanks.
Yeah, Deborah, we have addressed that, and we're going to be working with ECC and to make sure we have all the information for the next meeting so we have the slate of all the meetings together. We didn't have the wherewithal to do that because we don't have all the moving parts that we need to put in place to make those decisions to bring those dates to the floor.
Thank you, Chorgor, for joining. So if you guys are ready, I'm ready to accept the motion for this item, but we also have to make the motion if we're going to accept Chair Gore's recommendation to add those two slides. So the motion just needs to be include those slides.
The first slide was
the harm report. Okay. So having a slide that points people to the harm report.
So I would like to make a motion to approve the slides with the addition of a reference to the harm report and the wealth gap for the slides for the listening sessions. And logo, sorry. And logo.
This is Shanita. I second. It's Shanita.
All right. Any discussion? We have a motion and a second. All right. Let's call a vote.
Commissioner Herskin?
Yes.
Commissioner Gardner?
Yes.
Commissioner Sass?
Yes.
Commissioner Knowles?
Yes.
Commissioner Varla?
Yes.
Commissioner Bazile?
Yes.
Commissioner Small?
Yes.
Commissioner McClendon?
Yes.
Approved.
Awesome. There we go. All right. We got one more agenda item. The one pager. Oh, yep. Yeah. So, sorry. I know, right? I had a goal of getting us out of here at 7. Just, I know, I blew past my goal. I know, right? I learned my lesson, though. can we make a motion to approve the one pager in the fact sheet that you all should have a possession or a copy of?
I move that we accept the one-page fact sheet as presented this evening, which is actually two pages.
But it's on one page.
Oh, okay.
I second the one sheet.
I have a question.
Mr. Small, I move that we remove the red text that says budget, ? on the first side. Thank you. I didn't put that there. It was there before. Just FYI. But we should probably take that out.
So, you want me to start over, or are you going to say, okay?
I will withdraw my motion. This is Commissioner Varlack, and make a renewed motion that we accept the one pager as presented this evening with the line item for budget redacted or removed.
And I will second said motion.
All right. We're going to do a discussion.
Yeah. So, this. Sorry, it was on. This is Shanita, but asking if for this document, similar to what Commissioner Gore just stated, should we include the logo as part of the branding on that?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
Okay, so I'm going to withdraw that motion and make another motion that we approve this one-page fact sheet with the removal of the item that says budget with question marks and the addition of our logo.
I will second that motion, and I won't mention tattoos.
All right. Any other discussion items? All right. Let's call the vote.
Commissioner Herskin?
Yes.
Commissioner Gardner?
Yes.
Commissioner Sass?
Yes.
Commissioner Knowles?
Yes.
Commissioner Varla?
Yes.
Commissioner Bazile? Commissioner Small?
Yes.
Commissioner McClendon?
Yes.
Approved.
Awesome. All right. And in public comment, any after this agenda item? No public comment. All right, moving on to the next agenda item, which is the working group report out. Just any report outs that anyone wants to make?
The only question I would have would be about the website. You've already heard enough about the listening sessions.
The update for the website is the website had been fully populated with the content, and the information had been edited. Chair Gore really went through line by line and changed a lot of stuff that I adapted and put into the WordPress. Then Commissioner Barry was working with someone to do the design. So we're really close on that. I mean, we had some access issues between the commissioner and trying to get the ability to make all the design changes. But we're really close to that website. But all of the pop, like the content and stuff is inside of there.
I'm not sure. Do we have a timeline?
We do not have a timeline. I haven't met with Commissioner Barry on the when we're estimated to get the final designs for the website.
Okay, two quick questions on that. One, is there a place, of course, events, so we can actually publish event sections, so we can actually publish the events that are going to be the listening sessions and stuff? And also, is there a way to include or enable push notifications to people who sign up on the website so they get notified of upcoming events?
The push notification, we're going to have to check with the library on that, because the portion of the website that receives the information when someone says, I want to be notified, is done on the back end. So I'll figure out what that looks like. And then the other question was, absolutely, there's two places that the listening sessions will live on the website. It'll be the first page. So when people are on that first homepage, all the way at the bottom, it has a section where our listening sessions will live, and it'll say the time, the date, and, you know, and it will also have the area where the old, like the past listening sessions, so they people can see the history. Then there's an event page where it talks about, it pulls our meetings and other listening sessions into it. So there are two locations on the website where that information will live.
And the slide deck and sources are going to be available to be linked to on the page somewhere?
Absolutely. Not only on that page, but there will be a page just for resources. So the things that we put in our SharePoint is very important. Those things will, people will have access to that information from our website on a resource page.
Is it possible that at our next meeting in August, that we could do that presentation of the website?
Absolutely, we make it an action item to review the website.
And if it is completed prior to that, before it goes live, can you alert the commissioners so we can go on and look and play around and make sure there's everything's on there that's necessary so we can work with it before we go live, before the August meeting?
Absolutely. Yeah, the goal is for it to be done way before the August 23rd meeting, or for our August commission meeting, and definitely way before the first listening session. And also, just to add, the social media accounts will be created and ready to go alongside the website with the logo. Any other subcommittees want to report out? Seeing none, I would like to move to adjourn this meeting. I don't, that's right. Let's just move. I mean, move like my body, move. Like the move, like I'm ready. Let's adjourn this meeting. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.